Hi, this is Marika Meeks, founder of Incredible Stella, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story.
Before we jump into this week's episode, I want to read a review from Zach, who gives the podcast 5 stars and writes, "Really appreciate the love and inspiration this podcast is trying to put back into the founder universe. Just tuning into it now and loving it so far. I'm a co-founder at Foodie, an online platform that connects restaurants with Instagram influencers to trade free food for content and exposure on Instagram. You can learn more at foodieapp.com. Thank you so much, Zach, for the incredible review. And please keep listening to the show and welcome to the Startup Story community. And make sure you stay connected. I'm looking forward to getting updates on Foodie's progress. And for all of you listening, check out foodieapp.com. That's F-U-D-I-A-P-P.com. If you have found any value in the Startup Story podcast, please leave a written review on iTunes and plug your brand, URL, or social media accounts. Just like Zach experienced when he plugged Foodie, it becomes a mini ad and is just my way of saying thank you for taking the time to leave a review. The written reviews mean a ton for being discovered within the iTunes platform. And now, let's jump into this week's episode. Across the world, every October is dedicated as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Throughout the month, you will see pink ribbons as a symbol from a supporter. The National Football League, in fact, has an entire campaign called Crucial Catch that elevates the awareness of importance for screenings. This is a global topic, and globally, breast cancer represents 1 in 4 of all cancers within women. Breast cancer is the most frequently diagnosed cancer among women in 140 of 184 countries worldwide. In the U.S., over 42,000 women will lose their battle with breast cancer this year, and 500 men will die from breast cancer as well. I'm sharing all of this with you, not to set a tone of despair for the episode, but to help all of us understand how critical this is. I know for myself, it is easy to become numb to social issues like this when we're accustomed to seeing the messaging. We know October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and a lot of times we become numb to these things. But under the vein of the startup story, I want to talk about this under the entrepreneurship umbrella. The Startup Story is not a social issue podcast, but what we are about is unpacking real-life entrepreneurial journeys and hearing from people that have overcome some remarkable challenges. And in honor of breast cancer awareness, I thought it would be appropriate to unpack an entrepreneurial journey of a founder that had to battle through a stage 3 breast cancer diagnosis. Her story really was a matter of life and death. Our guest today is Marika Meeks, founder of Incredible Stella. Incredible Stella is a nonprofit that Marika started to help rescue dogs and place them in their forever homes. Stella is a pit bull that came into Marika's life while she was recovering from stage 3 breast cancer. Marika will unashamedly share how Stella saved her life and now, having fully recovered from breast cancer, wants to help save as many animals as possible with a special affinity for pit bulls. While Incredible Stella is Marika's first nonprofit, it is not her first venture. She actually had an incredibly successful chain of sandwich shops and was expanding up until her cancer diagnosis. Part of the reason I wanted to share Marika's story is because of the power of her perspective through her battle with cancer.
I think of cancer this way. I wouldn't wish it on anybody else. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I wouldn't undo anything I've been through because for me, cancer has been a gift. It's been a catalyst to finally wake up and start living life authentically as Marika Meeks. And I've never done that before. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity. What would have happened to my life if I had been diagnosed at 81 instead of 41? Too late to make changes at that point. I mean, for the most part. But I had the gift of cancer when I was early 40s.
While the tone of this episode starts off a little heavier than usual, just because of the nature of the battle Marika had to face, I assure you, this episode is one that will encourage and inspire you, assuming you allow yourself to hear about lessons learned from someone who came face to face with her own mortality.
I think my mom and dad were very instrumental in my desire to not only do my own thing, but I always had this like vision of my mind of, In fact, I remember making one of these, but we were still living in England at the time. And it was just a little, made out of cardboard boxes. But in my mind, it was a little machine where you put raw ingredients in the top and you turned the handle and out would come a product. And then you could sell that. And that was like from when I was 5 years old, that was just sort of like in me. And I have to say, I read your bio. And one of the things that really struck me is that you and I share something a little bizarre in common. And maybe I'm a little bit older, so inflation has like creeped in. But I also used to sell Bubblicious in middle school. I kid you not. I would sell it for 25 cents a piece. And I would make pretty good money selling candy. Like, that was the thing awesome. For me. And I would actually go on the school bus in the morning, and because that's when the kids still had their lunch money, right? With the Rolex watches, with the jacket opening up. Yep. Who wants a candy bar? Who wants some gum? And that was sort of my beginning venture into the process of buying and selling. Yeah. and then making, hopefully, in that transaction, a little bit of profit for me. So that's kind of how I'm wired. If I have to tell you, or if you've asked my husband, one of the things I always dream about is having a hot dog stand. And I can't even tell you why, but someday I'll have a hot dog stand. Yeah. So my mom and dad are very courageous people. They're in just turned 80, both of them. We immigrated here from England in the late 70s. So I was just a little girl at that time. My dad traveled to America quite frequently. He had British security clearance and worked in the aerospace industry.
Oh, wow.
At that time, things were pretty brutal in England with inflation and everything else. And it was a hard place to raise a family and keep up with the mortgage payments and everything else, because inflation was 20%.
Wow.
Or their mortgage rates were like 20%. Wow. And my dad had an opportunity, and he went home to my mom and he said, "How would you feel about moving to America?" And my mom just simply said, "Where are the suitcases?" And so for them, the opportunity to move to this country was such a liberating and at the same time terrifying experience, because they literally were either getting rid of everything, because there's very little things we could actually get to America, furniture-wise and things like that, take three small girls, myself and my two sisters, and really start life over again in America. And it was it's such a gift that they've given us. You know, if you live in this country and you've never lived anywhere else, you may not necessarily appreciate the difference, to no fault of your own, because you haven't experienced it. But my family, we realized, like, what a gift my mom and dad gave us by taking that massive risk, uprooting and moving and giving us the opportunity to live here.
I love that. And it's a theme that we've had from a few founders that were either first generation Americans or the entire family had immigrated together. When you are born and raised here, I do believe that we become a little numb to the opportunities that are here. But when you have seen a place where there wasn't such opportunities, your eyes are open to all that can be done here. And I think that impacts a little bit of drive in our founders that we've shared that story with. In fact, a couple episodes ago, Alina Vandenberg, the founder of two startups, she came from communist Romania. And so her story of opportunity is just eye-opening because of how different a communist country is. And so I absolutely can understand the sentiment and the gratitude you have for the courage your parents took in that. And so when you got here to the States, how old were you at that time?
I was about 6 years old.
So most of your childhood was here in the States. And so when you got here and you were selling bubble yum on the school buses, as life progressed, what was your parents' journey here in the U.S.? And then how did that impact your high school years? Because the reason I asked that question is that come the end of high school, it's an obvious closing of one chapter and beginning of another for you. And so what was going on in your life at that point in time?
My dad's always been very focused on his work. I would call him a classic workaholic. He had a lot of stress. And actually, after my family moved here, and I'm going to butcher the historical context of this, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying. Something I recall from, like, it's a battle where there were men at sea, and they get to this island, and they all get off, and they're going towards the island, and the captain or the general, like, sets their ships on fire, and the guys getting off the boat are like, are we going to need those? might not want to burn those just yet. And he's like, there's no option than moving forward and being victorious. And for me, I think about that often, and I really should look it up and learn the historical context of it. But it's like you have road A and you have no longer an option. And when life is like that, with anytime your back is kind of up against the wall, you got to make it work, right? Yeah. You got to find a way to make it work. And when we moved over here, unfortunately, my dad lost his job pretty quickly after we moved to Indiana. And it was a really, really stressful time because although my dad had all the proper British security clearance to work in the defense field, now starting over in America, he didn't have any of the American security clearances. So in his line of work, nobody could hire him over here.
Wow.
It was a pretty desperate time. And then we found out that they had actually done our immigration papers wrong. And my whole family had to kind of go into hiding. We weren't allowed to answer the phone.
Oh,
we were
goodness.
Totally off the grid because at that point, those ships that we came in flew, but they had already burned.
Yeah.
And if we were to get deported, my parents would have lost everything. So a lot of stress, a lot of childhood stress. And I remember there being a field day at school. And I was out on the field and my dad was working, of course, and my mom was there with me. And it was a dad's day, but my dad couldn't be there. And I remember playing with the other kids and I looked up and onto the horizon, I saw this figure walking towards. And the more I looked at it, I was like, my dad's here. I was so excited that my dad was here and he could make it to one of my school events. And I went running up to him and I was like, Dad, Dad. And he looked at me and he goes, where's your mother? And I was like, she's...
Oh, man.
On the bleachers, and he walked over to my mom, and that's where he proceeded to tell her that he just lost his job, and now we're in America, and we don't know what we're going to do next.
Oh, my goodness.
And so yeah, a lot of stress. But my parents, man, they're scrappers. They made it work, and I'm so proud of them and the influence they've had on my life to push and do the next thing.
Yeah.
And even if you're scared, you do it anyway. And that's what I try and teach my girls as well.
That is awesome. At the end of your high school years, as you're looking for what that next step is, what was in your mind? What did you want to do?
I knew that being sort of an entrepreneur in terms of like creating products and things like that was excited me, but I was really, really lost. I really felt very isolated, very lonely, and I didn't have any one clear direction of what I was going to do next. I did, by the grace of God, graduate from high school because that was not my thing at all.
Yeah.
Everybody was on my ass about like, what comes next? What are you going to do with your life? What are you this? And so I enrolled in college because I think a lot of kids feel a lot of pressure to go to college. And I think that, you know, when you're a senior in high school, people often say, well, what are you going to do next? And it's like, if you don't say you're going to college, you kind of feel like a loser, like you don't have a solid plan. And I don't think necessarily that that's the path for everyone.
Agreed.
And I think we're finding that out through the gross abuse of the student loan issues and kids ending up with degrees and then working for, you know, basically minimum wage at a job that doesn't even require a degree. That's a real shame. Yep. So I did go that route. I entered into community college. And I was very specific about what it was I was interested in that I wanted to pursue. And I was so frustrated that I had to waste time taking classes on things that felt like they had no interest and no bearing to really what my soul was calling me to do.
What was that? Because you said you knew what it is you wanted to accomplish. So aside from having an answer to the response of what are you going to do after high school, what was the reason for college? What did you want to do?
Nothing in particular with college. Really what I wanted to do is start being an adult. I wanted to have a job where I had responsibilities and I was learning how to do things in a practical sense.
Yeah.
That's really where my interest was at that time. And I don't even know if I finished that first semester. I really hated it. And I thought, you know what, I'm out of here. And then I set my sights on finding my first job and really getting some skills. And I really recommend that to kids that are graduating high school or college. You know, you don't have to have it all figured out right now.
Yeah.
Get yourself a job somewhere because every job you have, no matter what it is, teaches you skills, gives you experience, creates confidence for the next thing that's going to come along. And none of that is ever going to be wasted.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love that. So thank you for sharing that with our younger listeners. I know we have some business school listeners. I know we have some, in fact, I've had a few people on Instagram that are 17 reach out. So I know that that'll be of encouragement to them. So you leave school to get some working experience.
If I'm not mistaken, at this time, your dad still was running a business. Why did you not want to work for the family business?
I wanted to do my own thing, and I wasn't particularly interested in that line of work. And so I was 19. I met somebody. We got married quickly.
Okay.
Now, when I look back, I really realized that one of the reasons I got married when I was 19 is, first of all, I found someone that wanted me, which seemed like a miracle because I didn't have a very, very good self-esteem at that time. But secondly, as soon as we said we were engaged, everybody was off my ass. It's like nobody wondered anymore what I was doing with my life. It's like I had a plan. And I was like, oh, they're leaving me alone now. And that was like sort of a big relief for me, but the wrong reason to get married.
Yes.
Marriage is not a career path. So it didn't work out all that well. But I was 19 and I was married and we had bought our first house and I was starting my first business in which I did specialty advertising products from anything from pens to t-shirts to hats to golf balls, you name it, putting company logos on products. And I love the diversity of that work because every client that I worked with, every event that we did was different. And that's something I've really found for me is I'm a sprinter, not a marathoner. So I like things to be changing up and different and be challenged. And, you know, if I had to be a dentist that knew that my schedule for the next 6 months is literally blocked out every single day, that gives me massive anxiety just even thinking about that. So I prefer much more of the spontaneous change. I love the change.
So actually, I want to unpack that a little bit because I think that is such an incredible lesson for people to understand. I mean, the idea of being a sprinter and not a marathoner and knowing where your strengths are. How old were you when you started the promo product company?
19.
So you're 19, you start the promo product company, which means you have to become great at sales because now you're out there as a solopreneur trying to get new clients. Well, you had to figure it out, right? So when did you learn that trait about yourself that you are great in the short sprints, but the marathon race is a challenge for you?
I'm 47 now, and it's taken me to this age to understand that the way that my mind works is a lot like my sock drawer. You know, you could tell a lot about people as to how their sock drawer is organized. My sock drawer is a bit different from my husband's. And it's like, I always felt bad about myself. I'm not as organized. I'm not as analytical. I'm not a list person. I'm not this. My clothes aren't color coordinated. But my brain is not list driven. My brain is like all over the place and I'm always coming up with new ideas. And it's taken me really within the last 3 months to not feel like there's something wrong with me, the way that I function, and to appreciate the gifts. Yeah. And for my husband and I to realize that the gifts that he brings are different from mine, which is great. Yep. It's not a bad thing. And that we complement each other. And I can celebrate the gifts in my own makeup, which is what makes me so creative.
Oh my goodness, I love that. There's going to be so much for our listeners to learn. Think about that, right? If you're 47 now, if you could have figured that out about yourself at age 20, how much different things would be, right? How much faster we'd be able to move on our entrepreneurial endeavors because we understand our strengths in that. And so thank you for sharing that learning with our listeners because we have listeners of all ages and stages. And so you're 20. You're married, you have promo product business. Obviously, we're not talking to you today because of your promo product business. So how long did that last? How did it dissolve? And what was your next step?
It was a startup for me. And obviously, we were young. We had a house mortgage payment already. And my parents' company at that time, it was just my mom and dad, but they were growing quickly. My mom was gone all the time traveling and they needed help. And so we sort of worked out a deal that I would work for them part-time and I'd still be able to do my own thing at the same time. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this where you kind of have one foot in and one foot out and you're feeling like you can't like give all of your attention to either one. And so you're just in this constant state of sort of uneasiness, feeling like you're not doing a good job at anything. And so I did that for probably about a year. And I thought, you know what? I'm tired of this. I don't want to do this anymore. And I was at that point starting to see like what my parents' vision was, have a relationship with their customers. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to jump in full board on this and start working for my parents' company full time. And that's what I did.
That is awesome. What was that company for our listeners?
I used to have really long answers to this and I've really shortened it down. But basically, we provided specific software to office supply resellers. So not like the Office Depots or Staples, but like the mom and pop independent office supply retailers. We provided all their specialized back-end software. And we were really one of the first companies, period, to start utilizing the internet for file distribution. Back in the days when there were CompuServe and things like we had all of our customers up on CompuServe, and you know, it wasn't to do with me, it was to do with my dad's vision, but very early adopters of that. And then later creating that same software program, not in as much as having a computer with the hardware and software in front of you, but people using their own hardware and accessing our software via, back then it was called an ASP, over the internet, and it would run on our servers in Indiana. And that was back in the, I believe, the late 90s. So it really was like, people were like, what? You know, you really had to explain the concept, but that was pretty cool.
That is awesome. Because I mean, late 90s, I mean, you're talking really the boom of the internet
the
and software solutions. Yeah, and the crash as well, right? You know, Amazon's 98, I think, is when they consider their founding. And so, you know, there was a lot happening in that time. And so, but for a small independent software company, was the late 90s a period of stress for a small independent company, or was it really the boom for you guys?
We were always in such a massive growth mode. There was always a lot of stress. And the more successful you become at something, the more all of a sudden other people are kind of nipping at your heels. Yeah. And we had some big players, such as at the time, your younger listeners may not know this name, but like WorldCom, Bernie Ebbers, who's been on featured on American Greed. I mean, really high profile people that were coming at us. They wanted a piece of the pie of what we were doing. And there were times where I would be working on a Saturday and be the only one in the office. And I would see the caller ID come up and I knew what their phone number was in Virginia, but they were calling in acting like they were an interested customer and they were trying to get information for me. And I never disliked corporate life as much as I did at that point, because I'm not a person that plays dirty. And it just made me really sad. And it was especially sad to think that actually my very first experience with that wasn't even to do with being in corporate. I used to show horses. And the better I got at showing horses, the more money there is involved. And then I started seeing what people were willing to do to their horses to win. I can't be a winner. If I won fair and square, everyone would assume that I cheated. Mm. So it's like you don't even get the victory of really winning honestly, because people just are so in tune with what it takes to win. You do whatever.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to do whatever. And so that was sort of my first taste of that sort of greed and the power grab. And that continued on into my corporate life. I found that really, really scary. I felt outnumbered, outmanned. I felt the world of pressure on my shoulders to be up against the people that I was.
How old were you at that point?
I was probably maybe 30 at that point.
Okay. Still married, kids? What life?
I was married to my first husband and I had two small girls. Yeah. So it was a lot of stress. I remember driving home on the freeway and somebody like cut in front of me really fast. And it was like one of those moments where the adrenaline shoots through you. And I thought, I don't want to fight anymore. If this is my time, I'm done. I just felt so bereft of anything I needed emotionally to keep on going. It really, really was hard for me.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff like that that comes along when you're dealing with employees and being in business in general. There's a lot of dirty stuff, going to a trade show, setting all your stuff up that night before and having a competitor come and steal all your power cords. And it's like, why? Like, dude, you know, like, why do you have to be like that?
So was that that moment on the freeway where you just felt the weight of... Really, I mean, it sounded like the weight of hopelessness is what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Was that the moment where you realized, you know, I've got to get out of this environment and start my own thing?
I had always had a dream. We moved to Indiana from California, and California is the land of great little sandwich shops. And that had always been a dream. It's close to a hot dog stand, right? I mean, it's a sandwich shop. It's a type of sandwich.
You realize you're going to start the greatest debate in podcast history about is a hot dog a sandwich? I'm just going to put that up.
Well, I should go down in history for something. It's funny because I found a notebook many years after I started the restaurants where I had like sketched out what the menu was going to look like, the type of sandwiches I wanted, you know, all this other stuff. And it was years before, but I'm really big. Some people call it having vision boards, but I'm really big in like stepping into the future before I'm there. Yeah. And that's a whole different topic that creates a whole other set of problems for me, but it's very effective at creating, making those visions a reality. Yeah, yeah. So I did, I kind of had this dream, but I was kind of trapped. It's hard being in a family business. And at that point we had over 50 employees that relied on the company. My current husband worked for the company. My eldest sister worked for the company. My mom and dad both worked for the company. And I was the one that was sort of being tapped to be the succession plan for my mom and dad to retire. And I didn't feel like I had any options. And I felt like me leaving, since I was the kind of the out front person for the company, I was the one that did all the trade shows and the figurehead in terms of externally for the company, who was going to do that? I couldn't see a way. Who was I to like leave and leave my whole family stranded without like that succession plan and jeopardize everybody's way of making a living at that point? So I kind of sucked it up, and I had two small kids, and it was such a toll on me. It was such a toxic environment for me. I would say, okay, I want to start a new business. And I'd say, okay, why do you want to start a new business? To make money. Okay. And then I'd be like, Marika, you're already making really good money. You already have great benefits. You have a flexible schedule with the kids. So if you're doing it to make money, you already got that. So why do you want to like throw that all away, take a big risk and start something new? And then I'd have these conversations and I'd be like, okay, yeah, you're right. I'm like, I just need to get my head back in the game. I just need to like really reinvest myself. And I would try, and for 2 or 3 days, I'd be like, you know, on the keyboard, you know, being super, super intense. And then it would just, I just couldn't sustain it. Have you ever heard someone say that it's more exhausting pretending that you're doing something than actually doing something?
Yes.
That's kind of like how it was for me. I felt like a fraud because I had to care about all of these things, but on a soul level, I didn't care about any of those things. Yeah. And trying to push forward with an initiative that isn't aligned with where you are spiritually is the most draining thing ever. And I actually had said to somebody at that point that I felt like staying there was like a cancer eating away at me. I mean, that's the level of trappedness that I felt and despondency that I felt about yearning to be me, but not being able to be. I think that's a really important lesson because when I actually had that cancer diagnosis and they actually were able to figure out like how quickly that cell growth happened, I had had cancer at that point. So I think we need to pay a lot more attention to how we're resonating with what we're spending our time on.
Yes.
Wayne Dyer, if you listen to his 10 secrets, he says, you know, don't die with your music still in you. You got to be brave. And one thing I've learned about being brave is when you're being brave, you're terrified. And I think a lot of people are confused by that. But John Wayne says, courage is being afraid and saddling up anyway. You can't be courageous or brave if you're not frightened. And I try to tell my girls that all the time, like, I know you're feeling anxious. I know you're feeling fearful. That's what makes you brave, because you're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So I would just encourage people that life is too short. Literally, I know that life is too short because I almost lost mine. There's nothing stopping you. There's a great movie called The Edge, and there's a line in that movie that I refer to a lot. He says to Alec Baldwin, Anthony Hopkins says to Alec Baldwin, he says, what one man can do, another can do. And I always think of that, because there's nothing that makes you any different from me, except for I keep on putting one foot in front of the other. You do as well. And everybody else can, but they have to make that decision. And you have to be brave, and you have to be a little bit terrified.
Oh my goodness, Marika, you are taking us to church. Oh, that is awesome. You touched on your cancer diagnosis. I do want to sprint through your next steps from Britannia, the family business, because I want to get to that moment. I want to get to that moment where you're running another business and you get to the diagnosis. But from Britannia, you launch into pursuing the dream of a sandwich shop. But you didn't create your own sandwich shop. You franchised it, correct?
That's right.
What was the thought process in franchising versus creating? And I want our listeners to, again, you're the first of all of our podcasts that someone has purchased a franchise and grown a franchise business in that. And I think that is such an incredible way for entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs to look at entrepreneurship from the standpoint of, okay, there's an existing model that I can buy into and grow with some support in that. And I think that's where franchises become incredibly valuable, as a support system. So for that question back to you, why did you purchase a franchise versus creating something from nothing?
Well, part of the reason was that I was scared. You can ask any of my family members. I'm not a very good cook. I actually created a show at one point called Marika's 50-50, where I would just throw random ingredients together, and half the time it was okay, and half the time it tasted like, you know what? So that's Marika's 50-50. So I'm thinking, huh, okay, that makes me a great candidate to start my own restaurant. Sure it does.
Yeah,
And so I, thankfully, and I don't say this about myself very much, but I was smart enough to understand that I didn't know what I didn't know. And it's okay not to know what you don't know. I mean, you can't possibly know how to do something you haven't done before.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is when you're making a sizable investment, which for me was $500,000 to open a new venture, you better find out as much as you can.
Yeah.
And sometimes that comes from borrowing knowledge from other places. And for me, that meant borrowing knowledge from an existing and successful model that I didn't have to figure out everything on the go. I couldn't afford to figure it out as I went. I needed that business model. And that's really why I made that decision.
So one, I think it's brilliant. And I think you bring up a great point about borrowing knowledge from an existing model that works. And again, it piggybacks to or supports what you said earlier about if someone else can do it, so can you. It's just a matter of continuing to take that step forward. What did you realize? And I want to unpack a little bit about the franchise business just for people to understand. And it was a Jimmy John's, correct?
Yes.
So Jimmy John's franchise, and you had multiple locations at the time of when you don't have those businesses anymore, correct? You sold the franchise.
No, we sold them.
But you grew up to what, 8 locations, I think it was?
We were 4 locations. We were actually negotiating on our third location, I think, was our final day of negotiations, where that afternoon I actually got a call from my doctor saying I had cancer. So that really rocked the boat a bit.
Yeah. So growing the business, the franchise business, what did you realize from an operations perspective that was surprising to you, right? Because you bought into a franchise thinking there's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of support. Did you know or think that you were going to be an owner operator? Did you think this was a buy it and forget it type business? What were some of the things you learned in the franchise business?
A couple of things. Franchises are good in as much as you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Obviously, you don't probably make as much money because you're paying royalty fees and things like that. If you're a serial entrepreneur like I was, that's used to sort of making your own way, you get your wings clipped in quite a significant way, because you don't buy into a Jimmy John's to run it your way. You buy into a Jimmy John's to run it their way. And sometimes that was really challenging, because they have a tendency, I think probably all franchises do, to, it's very easy for them to spend other people's money.
Yeah.
And I've grown up on a shoestring, I make things work, and you don't always get that luxury when you're involved, when somebody else is controlling your destiny. So there's the good and the bad. I looked at a lot of different concepts, and I had a pretty soft gig, right? And literally, like, I'm sitting on my ass most of the time in front of the computer on the phone. That's what I did. That was my gig for 15 years of my life.
Yeah.
I hated it, but it was 15 years of my life. And so when I was looking at getting involved in a new concept, I was like, ooh, I could do bagels. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. I don't really want to get up that early, and I don't want to really do that. Oh, we could do donuts. And it's like, I went through and I discounted like all of these different businesses because I don't I don't really want to adjust my schedule that much. And yeah. I really want the weekends off. And it'd be nice if I could be done by 5 and, you know, all of this stuff. And so this is one of the funny things about my involvement with Jimmy John's is I'm like, oh, they open at 11. So, you know, I could get up, get the kids off to school, roll into the restaurant, get everything up, and I'd have plenty of time by 11 o'clock. So that was where my naivety came in. And actually, when I started the restaurant, I was there at 5 a.m. Every day, 7 days a week for the first 18 months I did that. And it was the hardest I had ever worked in my life. And people would ask me, well, would you do it again? I would. Oh, gosh. I know I'm not so sure. It was a lot of work, but it's like I wouldn't have done it if I would have known how much work it was going to be ahead of time. Yeah. But once I was into it, I was glad that I made the decision to do it, if that makes sense.
How hard was that, those 18 months, to also be present for your daughters, which I know is important for you, as well as now you're growing a franchise? How challenging was that period?
And I got a divorce in the middle of that, too.
Oh, my.
So, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
You got to kind of throw a little gasoline on the fire. If you're going down, man, go down hard.
Oh, my goodness. With all those things swirling, right? I mean, did you ever second guess your decision?
Only probably every 5 minutes.
Okay.
Of going through that. Like, here's one of the things I've learned about being an entrepreneur. And actually, I learned this just the other day with the help of my youngest daughter, who's now 20. I realized that, and I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs feel this way, there's a great sense of isolation when you feel like you're out there sort of braving it all.
Yes.
That can be an overwhelming thing. There's a great sense of, for me, that I was always feeling like a fraud because I felt like I always had to come off like I was confident and I knew what we were doing and I knew where we were going and this, that, and the other. I couldn't certainly confide how I actually felt to my employees. I couldn't confide to my vendors. I couldn't confide in my customers. I mean, I had like everywhere I turned to, I had to act this certain way. Meanwhile, if you were to strip my, if I had those pants where the bottoms unzip and they turn into shorts, you would have seen my knees knocking, you know, the whole time. And I realized that as much as I love doing my own thing, being an entrepreneur for me has mainly represented me being stressed out and terrified and always feeling like I'm on the precipice of failing and not being good enough and not, you know, I don't know. It's always been very, very stressful for me. And that's what's been so interested about where I am now, because some of those things are starting to resurface. I'm having what people would look at to be like all this success, but at times I feel like I've never felt like such a failure. So I'm coming to terms with that. So my 20-year-old helped me with that the other day. And I feel like I'm under a lot of pressure from a lot of different directions with what I'm doing. And I feel very alone with that. One day she came over to visit and I just like broke down and started sobbing. I was just like, so, and this was just a few weeks ago. I was just like, I just can't take like one more person coming to me and asking this question or that question. I don't have any more. Like I'm empty. I'm an empty vessel at this point. And so she asked me the other day before we left on the book tour, she said, Mom, she goes, are you feeling any better? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, I really realized that I have all this success, but I feel like such a failure. And she goes, that's interesting. I brag about you guys. And I go, you do? And she goes, yeah, I brag about how big a part you played in making Britannia successful and how you sold that company and how you were the first person to bring a Jimmy John's into Fort Wayne and you grew that and you sold that company and how you moved out here to Arizona and you got involved in real estate and you were successful at that. She goes, and how you got cancer and how you beat that. And now like what you've created with Incredible Stella. And she goes, it's all amazing. That's what I brag about. And I kind of had this moment. It took my 20-year-old saying to me how she saw my life and then all of a sudden how I saw it. And I saw everything I've done that other people would view as successful, I've carried around like just this profound sense of being a failure and not being good enough. And this was just last week. And I thought, I got to change this. I have to recognize this pattern now, and I have to realize that I'm doing good things in the world. I have to own that, and I'm tired of being afraid. I'm tired of not being good enough. I'm tired of feeling like I'm not worthy, and that I can work hard and move towards my dreams and feel good about it.
I hope, oh my, this was the most electric 4 minutes in the Startup Story history. Like, I hope every single listener can get to a quiet place, because they're probably listening while they're driving, but get to a quiet place where they can just rewind that a few minutes and listen to everything you said. Because everything you're experiencing, that you experienced a couple of weeks ago before your daughter poured into you, that is why I started the Startup Story. Because that process you were in, that state you were in, is common among entrepreneurs, but no one talks about it, right? And the reason I want to bring all this narrative to the surface is so that entrepreneurs can feel as though they're not alone, as though there's a community. Now, you know, how I can activate the Startup Story listeners and to actually create a community, that's something I need to be figuring out. But that is why I started the Startup Story. So thank you so much for being so transparent in just how recent all those feelings were. But now I do want to go into the Jimmy John stage when you get the call from your doctor. And the reason being is it is the month of October. And so, you know, the month of October, the NFL, there's so many places that bring awareness to breast cancer during the month of October. I would love to just tell more and more stories of breast cancer survivors who were founders and how they navigated it. Because we know entrepreneurship is hard. We know that there are some challenges in entrepreneurship. But one of the things that not everyone knows and can relate to is how much more challenging it all becomes when you are faced with something that is life-threatening. And so with everything that was going on in your world, how did you navigate everything that goes on with breast cancer? And again, I apologize for my naivety in this space, but I mean, just in the numerous doctor's appointments and in the treatments and in the family conversations that had to take place as you were diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, I believe. And again, I apologize for not knowing exactly the severity of all the different stages, but when you, I mean, just how did you do it all?
I had an amazing thing happen to me when I opened up my first Jimmy John's, and I was in a very sort of emotionally abusive marriage for 17 years. And when I finally found the location I wanted to lease for my first restaurant, I met the developer who developed the shopping center. And there was something about he and I that clicked that day. We were both married to other people, but he was the first person that I felt like ever helped me. We became friends because he had to help me with the build out. I was doing that all by myself. I had no idea about construction or anything else. There's a lot involved with opening up a restaurant. And so we worked together pretty closely for several months and we became friends. And I confided in him, you know, some of the things that were going on at home for me. And one day I was telling him something that was like really upsetting to me. And we were at a coffee shop where we happened to bump into each other. And at that moment, he like slammed his fist on the table and he said to me, he goes, enough is enough. He goes, when are you going to do something about this? My first reaction was, I was like, oh man, now he's pissed at me too. Mm-hmm. And so he was just really rattled by what I had told him. And he was saying, you need to do this and you need to do that and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I'm nodding my head, but inside, we've all had those experiences where inside you're like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And yeah, I could never do that. But I was like, just trying to kind of placate him. And I left there and I thought, oh man, he's mad at me. And that didn't feel good. I didn't need that on top of already feeling the way I was feeling. And then I had this moment where I realized that he wasn't mad at me. He was mad for me. Mm. There's a big difference between those two things. It doesn't sound like a lot, but there's a big difference. And it cracked the door for me at that point, thinking to challenge my own beliefs of what I could and I couldn't do. And so that was a big sort of catalyst. And later on, that man became my husband. And it was through that partnership and that loving relationship for the first time in my life did I have someone who I felt really loved me, made me feel loved, made me feel worthy. I remember a moment before we were married, we were standing in the kitchen and I thought so highly of him. We were looking up at each other and he was had just kissed me. And I saw this look in his eye and I realized if this person that I thought so highly of could look at me like that, maybe there was something lovable about me after all. And it changed my life. And so we ended up getting married. 2 years into that is when I got my cancer diagnosis. So I had a wonderful partner for the first time in my life who put me ahead of everything else, never made me feel like a burden. Although it was a partnership that we grew the stores together, he basically fired me from being involved anymore because of the stress and because he really wanted me to focus on my health. And he basically said, the restaurants don't matter if in a year you're dead. They just don't matter. And so he took on not only 100% the responsibility for the restaurants, but he also took on my two daughters and has been a dad to them. And when I eventually left Indiana to pursue an alternative treatment out in Scottsdale, he handled everything for the 7 months that I was gone. And that's a blessing that I will have eternal gratitude for, is this guardian angel that walked into my life. And in fact, I remember one day before we were really together, he had stopped in the sandwich store, and I saw him kind of coming in, but I pretended not to see him, kind of thing, you know, when you don't want to act too excited. And it was cold, and he was wearing this long winter coat, and he walked in, and I looked up from the register, and he's standing in the lobby. And I just remember that I just wanted him to open up his coat, and I just wanted to climb inside and have him wrap it around me like Batman, right?
Yeah.
Like just wrap it around me. And I realized that what this man's given me for the first time in my life is a place where I can feel not only loved, but I can feel safe. Mm. And so I know that's not very helpful probably to other people, but I have to acknowledge that as being a huge part of where I am today and the gift that I've been given by having him in my life.
Your journey is going to be a new experience for a lot of listeners because it includes a variable that most of my listener base, I assume, does not have experience with, and that is life-threatening illness. So thank you for sharing the safety and security that your husband brought in that season, because brought to you, period, and how he provided during that season of health. But there's something just as a, from an entrepreneurial perspective, that you said that I do want to ask. You said he had to fire you. So are you saying that even with the diagnosis, you still had your mind engaged in the business, that he had to boot you from it? It wasn't just a perspective shift, like, I just don't care about anything else anymore. It is all about getting through this. Like, what was going on?
Well, I think when you get a cancer diagnosis, it's kind of like you're looking out the window of a second story building and you're watching all the people mill around like a swarm of ants going about their daily lives. And all of a sudden it's not relevant to you anymore. Like you're cut from the herd and you're now living life sort of as an observer and not like actively pursuing it. And I mentioned earlier that the day I got the call from my doctor was the same day that we were in our last negotiations to close on buying another restaurant, which we put on hold at that point because we had no idea what was going on. And it took me probably a month and a half. And I told Brian, I said, I think we should go ahead and buy that restaurant. We were planning on doing it. It was in our plan. If I'm going to have a future, we need to start living like there's a future that we're living for. And I think that's important to move forward. And so we bought that restaurant and I thought, okay, I can go back in like a limited way and still be involved. And of course, we bought that restaurant and it just so happened that one of our managers got in a car crash. So Brian had to cover that store. The new store that we were buying that week, the day we bought it, two of the managers quit. And it was like, Brian can only be at so many places at once. I had to step in and cover this. And so I did. And I was worried about it because I just didn't feel like I was in a place to doing that work. But it's like, I couldn't dump more on my husband. I mean, there were no other resources. There was no place else to turn. I didn't say anything about it. And I just kept on working. And then about a month later, I was sitting in the chair and I scratched my chest or something. And I felt another lump. And I just like completely broke down. And Brian's like, well, you know, what's wrong? And I said, I feel a lump. And so he's trying to keep me calm. And I said, feel it. And he goes, yeah, I feel it too. I cried the entire night. It was just like, I just couldn't take anymore. Yeah. Woke up the next morning and I told him, I said, I have been like, the universe has been telling me that I shouldn't be working in the restaurants. And of course, I'm sobbing over this too. I might start crying now. And I said, but I just like, I'm supposed to be your partner in this. And we're moving forward with this because this was my idea and I can't like leave this to you. I want to be your partner. That's when he told me, he said, no, you know, it's not going to do me any good if you're dead in a year. He goes, so you have to take care of you. And we went to church, came home. I was getting changed and I went to feel that lump again. and it was gone. And I thought, are you kidding me? I mean, not that I wanted the lump.
Yeah.
But it's like my body was telling me, like, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing right now. You're focusing on the wrong things. And so I've learned to be a lot more in tune with my intuition and the messages that my body is sending me. And, you know, we haven't talked about this, but it was my intuition that diagnosed my cancer after I had 4 mammograms and a doctor's visit that said that I had nothing to worry about. And I finally, after having an experience one night that just like shook me to my core, all I had done when we went to bed is reach over to kiss Brian. As I reached over, my hand kind of grazed over where that lump had been in my breast. And I was like instantly like flooded with this like adrenaline and dread. And I was like, what is going on? And I realized it was when I grazed across where that lump was. And I told Brian that night, that was a Sunday. I said, tomorrow I'm demanding a biopsy. I did that on Monday. Friday, the doctor called me and said those words that nobody wants to hear. I'm really sorry, but you have cancer. And by that point, I was stage 3. By that point, they said I'd had cancer for 6 to 8 years.
Oh my gosh.
And that's part of the reason why I declined chemotherapy too, is my intuition was like, yeah, no.
Unbelievable. Oh my goodness. But I will say, like, I love how you owned your medical decisions and all of that. This is not a medical podcast, but I tell it to people all the time. Like, you have got to own your medical decisions. And so thank you for sharing that and that being part of your journey.
People were very upset about my decision to not do chemotherapy. And one of the reasons I didn't do it is that, first of all, I'd already felt kind of let down because I felt like I followed conventional the medical advice, and now I'm stage 3 cancer. It's like, how does that happen? And yeah. I basically diagnosed it. Nobody else did. Yeah. And they were only giving me 61% chance to make it to 5 years. And I thought, that's like flipping a coin, you know, it's like flipping a coin, and I'm supposed to do that. And so we had a lot of backlash. I would never advise anybody on what to do, because I believe, like what you just said, medical choices have to come from within and what you believe is right for you. And I am not in any position, and nor is anybody else, to say, I really think you should do such. Oh, really? Oh, you think you know what's best for me? Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah.
But I had to even write my family a letter. And this is sort of the entrepreneurial side coming out again, where I was like, look, I know you love me, and I know that you're scared, and I know you don't want me to die, but I have to make this decision for me. I am the CEO of me. Brian is the project manager, and we have a plan on how we're going to beat this thing. Mm-hmm. And it does come down to being responsible and in charge of yourself. And I had to learn that the hard way. And I didn't do chemo, but I doesn't mean to say I didn't suffer, because it was a really rocky journey for me.
How long was the entire, before you were cleared of cancer, how many, from diagnosis to clearance, how long was that journey?
2 years.
2 years. One of the reasons I love to talk with people about their stories, and whatever the story may be, entrepreneurship, medical challenges, marital challenge, whatever the case, I love people and I love their stories and their journey. We get to hear from someone, from you, who experienced a perspective that many of us may not ever experience until maybe later years, or until we get a diagnosis for something. Sometimes it's a little too late for this learning. And so for someone who has been faced with mortality, now looking back, what is the one thing you look at from just a complete perspective shift of how you navigated your 30-something years up to diagnosis, and how you now navigate life post-cancer because of that 2-year journey?
I think of cancer this way. I wouldn't wish it on anybody else. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I wouldn't undo anything I've been through, because for me, cancer has been a gift. It's been a catalyst to finally wake up and start living life authentically as Marika Meeks. And I've never done that before. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity. What would have happened to my life if I had been diagnosed at 81 instead of 41? Mm-hmm. Too late to make changes at that point. I mean, for the most part.
Yep.
But I had the gift of cancer when I was early 40s, and I had the wake-up call. My husband and I realized in a very legitimate way truly how short life was. And that's one of the reasons why we picked up and moved to Arizona. Is I was there for 7 months. I fell in love with the area. We were kind of burned out on the restaurants, 112 employees under the age of 26. You get what I'm saying. and we just decided, you know, we were fortunate enough to have been profitable with the business, and we had several buyers that were interested in buying our stores. And we said, let's go, just like my mom and dad did. And I'm just like realizing that, where are the suitcases? And we just packed up and we left.
That is amazing. Unbelievable. You know, having that perspective, though, and I hope, you know, in our show notes, we're going to have a link to get your new book, Incredible Stella. And so
I was just going to say, we haven't even talked about dogs yet. That's what I'm all about.
Yep. There's going to be a link in the show notes for people to get that book, Incredible Stella. But I do want to, for the sake of time, advance a little bit through that journey. And again, I think because of the perspective shift you had, and of course, the book will lay out some amazing breadcrumbs that led you to Stella, your beautiful pit bull. And again, I really hope the listeners will get this book. But that perspective shift you had, having journeyed through cancer, having had the successful businesses you've had and all the things, how did you start this new venture that is the journey of Stella, if you will, with a different roadmap than your other startups?
Well, I didn't know it was a startup to begin with, so I didn't really have a roadmap. And that's kind of one of the challenging things about probably what causes me a lot of pressure today is this is very different from, you know, making a $500,000 investment and knowing in 6 months I can open the doors and start selling sandwiches or hot dogs or whatever they happen to be, or Bubblicious. So it's scary because I don't really know where this is going. All I know is that I ask for guidance and I ask for awareness every day. Like, what's the next step? Where do I need to be? What do I need to do? And I try to get out of my own way in terms of getting the fear out of the way and doing it anyway. And one of the scariest things for me was to really be open and authentic with people, because a lot of us are afraid that if we are, that people will look down on us or not think, you know, will think differently of us. And so I've really challenged myself with our journey with Stella. We now have like 80,000 followers, to show up as me. And so one of the things we do on Wednesday mornings is we give a little like inspirational talk. And this is how it goes. It's 6 a.m. I roll out of bed. I've got my cup of Starbucks. I probably have mascara under my eyes. My hair is sticking up every which direction. That's how I show up because that's what's real for me at that moment. And although that probably sounds kind of weird, I have received such a gift from knowing that people can see me at what I perceive to be my worst and they still like me. Like, that feels uncomfortable to even say out loud, but it's like, I feel because I've had such acceptance from them, it's also allowed me to have a lot more grace and acceptance towards myself. So I recommend you do show up and be yourself. You don't have to be like everybody else because there's enough audience members to go around that are going to resonate with your style just as they will with anybody else's.
Yep. You know, and that brings up a great point. Can you unpack, obviously there's the book, there's the social platform, but can you unpack what your new business is?
Well, that's a tough question. That's something I ask myself every day because it seems to be evolving all the time. I have like visions of where I think it's going. Our first book just came out. We've been number one new release on Amazon for over a month now, which is very exciting. We're in Target as a recommended read. We've been endorsed by Jackson Galaxy from Animal Planet. So those are all super cool things. We're working on a second book proposal, which is awesome. I want a feature film. And my feature film, I've already started writing it, is about a middle-aged woman who is dealing with the same sort of health crisis as I am, who's sort of like a phoenix rises from the ashes, scarred, you know, from her warrior wounds of what she's been through, recreating her life. But she is a equalizing force, a vigilante of sorts that gets involved with animal situations and rights the wrongs. And I'm very excited about that concept and the story that we've already written and put forth towards that. So that's my, you know, that's ambitious, right? To have a movie. Yeah. I even have my actors picked out and everything. But it's like, you got to go there. It's like, you got to see it before you get there. And, you know, maybe that sounds unrealistic, but it doesn't really matter. It's what's inspiring to me. It's what keeps me going and focused and drives me. And whatever comes of it, and this is something I think is so important, there is nothing you could ever do that you can chalk up to be a total failure or waste your time. When I look back at all the things I've done in my life that I haven't enjoyed, every single one of them has prepared me to be exactly where I am right now. Mm. At the time, you think, oh man, that didn't work out. And you feel like an ass because you tried something that failed or you perceived that failed. And then you realize 3 years later, you're having to use that same skill set for a new endeavor. It's preparation, people. It's not failure.
Oh my goodness. This is unbelievable. I know I myself have just been incredibly encouraged and inspired by your story. And just to be able to see how does someone who has seen potentially the latter years of their life and come from it and now is growing something completely different and alignment with their passions. And that is encouraging to me. That is a learning to me. That is something that I get to take away from this. And I hope our listeners will do the same. And again, I hope our listeners will get the book and hear the journey of how Stella came to be into your life. Cause it is an unbelievable. Again, it's one of those breadcrumbs throughout your entire journey. You can just see leading up to this moment and we get to learn from it without having to go through the challenges of cancer. Should we choose to learn from it? And I think the listeners will have to either chalk this up as an episode that doesn't relate to them, it'd be foolishness, or they're going to look at this and think, okay, wait a second. I can absolutely change the way I view how I approach my business. I can change the way I view how I enter a new business, all from someone who has seen what could have been potentially the latter years of their life.
Well, one thing I forgot to mention, like our whole purpose, you asked, you know, what's my business now? And I got all excited about this movie and story idea I'm working on. I want to explain why, like what's the why behind that? The why is not necessarily to have a movie. The why is to advance three things that are really core to my mission. One is to encourage people to adopt and not shop their dogs because we have a massive overpopulation issue at the shelters. Two is to encourage and underwrite spay and neuter initiatives all across the country. And three is to advocate for pit bull type dogs everywhere to give them a fair shake. And really, like, everything comes back to that. Everything I do that builds the platform is so that I have a wider audience that I can share those messages with on a constant basis. And I am committed to using my second chance at life to help these dogs get a second chance too. And that's really the core, the seed of everything, the genesis of why I do what I do today.
That is awesome. And as a pit bull owner, thank you so very much for doing that. They are amazing dogs. And so I love that you're doing that. So now, the two questions I end every episode with, and I say it often, I love these questions. And if I had to somehow bring the startup story down to just a 20-minute episode one, I don't know how I would do it. But if I had to, these are the two questions that I would make sure always make the cut. And that first one is about gratitude. And I'm excited to hear from you because I think, again, you just have a different perspective that a lot of us won't get the opportunity to have. And so when we think back on our journey from childhood to now, if we forget all the people that poured into our lives to get us to where we are today, I truly believe we'll become isolated because we'll start thinking we got to where we were on our own. And that ultimately will lead to our failure. But so when you look back on your journey, who are the people that you point to with such immense gratitude for their contribution to your story?
When I was in middle school, I had a bus driver. His name was Dave Hallmeyer. And I liked Dave and Dave liked me. He enabled my candy selling adventure on the school bus. He was very supportive. But there were two girls on there that were known bullies. And I was okay for a while. And then they started targeting me. I remember they were just awful. You know, I mean, I can't even like recreate it, but they were just awful. And I remember them coming at me on the school bus. And he stood up for me one day and he said, "You're sitting here." And I sat directly behind his chair as the school bus driver. And he protected me. He made me feel safe. He made me feel important. And I've been blessed with several guardian angels over the years that were able to sort of step in for me. And maybe they saw something in me. Maybe they were just kind people. I don't know which way it is, but I think it's really important that like the actions that you take with respect to other people, you may not realize the impact you've had on them, but they'll always realize that. Yeah. They'll always hold you in that high esteem, and you can really make a difference. And that difference isn't necessarily something that you're going to feel, but it's a legacy of yourself you're leaving with them. So we got to look out for one another and not tolerate bullies. If somebody needs a hand, you help them. And you got to do that with love and kindness to any other living being that you see, dogs, people included.
Oh my goodness, that is awesome. So the last question, as our time comes to an end, we've been talking to tens of thousands of listeners, and most of them are entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs. And the Startup Story is like a digital mentor for all of them. But I'd like to bring the conversation down to just you and one person. And that person could be any of my listener personas, the frustrated entrepreneur who's not getting the traction they thought. Maybe it's a lot harder than they thought. Maybe it's the wantrepreneur that maybe they're 60 and they think they're too old. Or maybe it's someone who's in their 40s and they have a mortgage and a spouse and kids and they think the responsibilities are too high to pursue their dreams and their passion. Or maybe it's the defeated entrepreneur who's just been punched in the gut time and time again and they're just willing to call it quits. Whatever persona you want to speak to, I want to bring the conversation down to just you and that person. What do you say to that person?
I think I've been all of those people, probably sometimes all at the same time. So all I can say is that whatever you do has to resonate. And I think that it's really important. Like, even if you don't know where you're going, you got to keep trying new things. You got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And if you take a job that you don't like, quit. Do something else. And you have to live within your means because, and I was just telling my daughter this the other day, you don't want to get the good job that has the great paycheck and then get a newer car and a more expensive place to live. And then 6 months later realize, I don't really like this guy I'm working for, or I don't think this company's very ethical. And then you're thinking, I got to pay the rent and I got a car to pay for. And so I think it's really important to save what you can to have your own financial freedom, and not just financial freedom. It gives you freedom when you're not tied down by the bigger house or the nicer car. So buy what you can afford to buy, but don't put yourself in a situation where you're limiting your options. Because there was a point in time where I was with our first company, Britannia, and I thought, well, you know what? If I'm going to work at a job that I hate, then I might as well have a nicer house. And I almost fell into that trap of realizing I get the nicer house with the bigger mortgage and I have the noose a little bit tighter around my neck and I'm never leaving here. And so that would be my advice, is try to keep yourself as free and independent as possible. And that way you can make decisions on a dime and change your mind and go a different direction. And at the very least, you learn something, you learned what you didn't like, and you can move in a different direction.
Part of what makes the Startup Story so incredibly unique is that it allows us to learn from someone's journey each and every single week. I hope that through Marika's story, you walk away with a new perspective on challenge, as well as a new desire to fight and endure. I love that Marika shared earlier that every single step or misstep is setting you up for a new opportunity. It's all preparation and not failure. And it's in that strength that Marika can look at her battle with cancer as a gift. Wow, what a perspective shift, and what a powerful story. I hope you found some real value in Marika's startup story. And if you've been around the Startup Story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So if you have found any value in Marika's startup story, there are three easy ways we can support Marika and her entrepreneurial journey. The first is incredibly simple, and that's follow Incredible Stella on Instagram. And that's Incredible, B-U-L-L, a play on Pitbull, Incredible Stella, again, on Instagram. The second way, of course, buy her new book, Incredible Stella, How the Love of a Pitbull Rescued a Family. We're going to have a link in our show notes to get a copy, so make sure you get that. And the third is, once you've read her book, leave her review on Amazon. All these platforms that we talk about, written reviews really mean something. It's huge for being discovered. So let's show up for Marika Meeks in a huge way. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So let's make this happen for Marika. And now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible about sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We too are a startup, and word of mouth is everything. So please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Startup Story, or on Twitter at Startup Story _. If you're on LinkedIn, please search for the Startup Story and follow our company page. LinkedIn is a really powerful way to raise awareness of the show. But the most impactful way you can help us grow our audience is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Or if you listen to this show via Spotify, then please simply share the podcast directly from your Spotify app or wherever you listen to the show. These simple actions can make a huge impact in getting these amazing founder stories out to the masses. And please make sure to tag or mention the Startup Story when you do share so that we can connect with you and say thank you directly. I'm so incredibly appreciative of the fact that you listen to this show each and every week. And I look forward to sharing these amazing stories with you every Tuesday with hopes of encouraging and inspiring you to start your story. If you like this podcast and are thinking of creating your own, consider talking to my producer, Danny Osmond. He helps thought leaders, influencers, executives, and authors create, launch, and produce podcasts that grow their business and make a real impact in this world. You can contact him today at emeraldcitypro.com/startup story.